Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and my guest this week is Robert Coulson, senior correspondent here at RFERL. Thanks for joining me today, Rob.
Hey, Steve. Nice to talk to you again.
Okay. First, I'd like to turn to something from the week past, not the week ahead, and just talk a little bit about Andrei Sakharov, the physicist and dissident who won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1975. Sakharov was born 100 years ago, last Friday, May 21st, and he died in December 1989, 2 years before the Soviet Union fell apart. Now, last week, I wrote an article in which I tried to address what Sakharov might think of Russia under President Vladimir Putin if he were alive today. And Rob, in an article you wrote ahead of the 25th anniversary of the Soviet collapse, you touched on the tantalizing question of what might have been, essentially, had he lived longer or had his ideas and goals been realized, at least to a greater degree. I think it's a harder question to answer than the one that I tried to address, but I'll ask it anyway. Rob, let me put it this way. What are one or two of the biggest ways in which Russia might be different today had Sakharov's ideas been realized?
It is a difficult and big question, and you could talk about it for hours, for sure. One of the things that I noticed while I was the commemorations were going on last week, people were just posting quotes from Sakharov, and there were just so many of them that were so relevant to the situation now that it was stunning. I would name a few important things. First of all, he really emphasized the primacy of the individual and personal rights and of intellectual freedom. And he saw the state as a mechanism for promoting those things. He wanted to create institutions that would basically guarantee individual rights, which is something obviously that's completely foreign to Russia under Putin. Another really important thing in his legacy, I think, he understood the need for reckoning with the past, the Soviet past, especially with Stalinism. He understood the sort of moral environment that had been created in the Soviet Union from going through the Stalin experience. He understood that the only way to change that environment would be complete opening of archives, the scientific study of the past, as opposed to, say, the nationalistic mythological study of the past that's going on in Russia now. And that's a sort of a side note of that, I think, is that as somebody who recognized the importance of that, he would have been in an ideal position to navigate Russia's relations with the former Soviet countries and the countries of the former Soviet bloc in Central Europe much better than anybody else and much more successfully than the people who actually did come to power in Russia. A third thing I would definitely mention also is that, I mean, he fought very hard for political pluralism in Russia as a way of guaranteeing the individual's rights vis-a-vis the state, and fought against the communist monopoly on political power. He never had time to work on the related issue of the KGB's power, but he understood it better than anyone else, from his own personal experience and from his work as a human rights activist, both the KGB's power, the power of the politically controlled courts and law enforcement. And I think that he could have exposed the sort of KGB capture of the Russian state that happened over the as Putin came to power. And just one last thing, and definitely you need to mention, is his stature in the West. You know, you can easily imagine Western leaders falling over themselves to stand next to him, to consult with him, to include him in meetings and various processes. And Russia's relations with NATO and the European Union and the arms control process would have been just so radically different than what actually happened that, you know, you can't even imagine it, I think. So those are the ways I would mention.
Well, I got to say, I think those are, you know, I'm very struck by how, you know, how accurate that seems to me, just from from what I've seen and read, it just, all four of those points, I guess. The first two, I think you mentioned, these are things that are very often, seen, I think, as kind of the main obstacles or the main hurdles that Russia faces to being kind of a thriving country that, the things that it needs to do to be really successful, one being, the reckoning with the past, which, obviously there's been less reckoning, as we've gone along since the 80s and then the Soviet breakup and now the Putin era. I think we've gone there. Russia's gone in the direction of less reckoning rather than more. And the other is the first one you mentioned, the kind of rights of the individual. And, I think it's stated by politicians and others, that what needs to happen is that the state becomes something that serves the individual and the people as opposed to the other way around. So I think so that would be my less, I guess, eloquent way of putting two of those points. But thanks very much. You also mentioned political pluralism, and that's a decent way to segue, I think, to the second topic. Because it has to do with pluralism and what electoral politics looks like in Russia today. Obviously, the Kremlin-controlled United Russia Party is dominant in legislatures across Russia, including in the national legislature. Tomorrow, and opposition parties, liberal opponents are essentially not in the Duma or the Federation Council. Tomorrow, the Russian State Duma, the lower house of parliament, is to hold the second of three votes on legislation that would now bar people with connections to groups deemed extremist from running in elections at all levels. Now, some adjustments are sometimes made in the second reading of a bill in the Duma. That's when changes are sometimes made in bills that are going through. But it seems almost certain that this legislation will be adopted soon, with plenty of time before the Duma elections that need to be held by mid-September. Rob, would you disagree? And either way, what can you tell us about the possible purpose of this bill?
No, I definitely wouldn't disagree. I think that this law will definitely be passed in some form or another. It's still in the editing process, so it remains to be seen exactly how draconian it will be, but right. It's definitely going to happen. And it's targeted at Navalny and Navalny's groups, obviously, that are also in the process of being declared extremist organizations by the court. It's what interests me about the whole discussion is how casual. I mean, the right to run for office, to vote, and to run for office is one of the rights that are enshrined specifically in the Russian Constitution. And how casually they're discussing, stripping a class of citizens of this right retroactively. I mean, it's not like they're saying that people who contribute to extremist organizations are being to be barred, but to people who ever contributed to organizations that eventually were declared extremists are going to be barred. And if something like that happens, it's just, to me, it shows the extent to which the authorities have sort of given up the pretense of managed democracy, which I think I've mentioned before on your podcast that it still wouldn't surprise me at all if the elections are canceled at all. The political theater of holding elections is becoming more and more threadbare with each one of these decisions, and eventually it's just going to be pointless having such elections, I think. So.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, certainly, I guess Navalny's supporters will, and I think they have called for using this to, to kind of redouble efforts to promote the smart voting in which they ask voters to cast their ballots for essentially the person, the candidate who has the best chance of winning over a United Russia candidate. But obviously, they already barred Navalny from the presidential election in 2018. Now there's the prospect of of people who have been associated with him have contributed to his organizations being barred from running in any elections at any level. As for the, I mean, my guess would be that they would, that they'll go ahead with these elections in part because it's kind of, you know, seen as the setup, I guess, for 2024 when Putin will, you know, presumably announce a decision of whether to run for another term or not. So I think to keep that veneer of the veneer of, you know, democracy, a democratic system ahead of 2024 might be important. But I don't know who's to say, really.
Like, they definitely have wanted to have this veneer, but it's becoming so thin these days that they may need to adopt another strategy before September comes along, because a veneer has to cover something.
Right. That does make sense. All right, Rob, we're running out of time. We'll wrap it up there. Thanks very much for joining me.
All right. Thanks for having me again.
Okay, I'll be back next Monday for another look at the week ahead in Russia. Meanwhile, please keep an eye out for my Week in Russia newsletter on Friday. Thanks for listening.